When a court rejected desperate faith-based pleas to halt the outrageous trampling of women's rights in Texas earlier this month, it was just the latest in a series of unthinkable violations of family privacy and personal conscience in a state that used to pride itself on rugged individualism. Well, it's quite literally now a nanny state, deeply involved in both the legal challenges and direct assistance to women being hurt by the arbitrary decisions. Is the Reverend Daniel Cantor, a Dallas pastor, and I am very pleased to have him with us today. Daniel, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Gaddy. I'm glad to participate in this conversation with you.
For those unfamiliar with the situation in Texas, would you just briefly summarize the challenge currently facing women who need reproductive care there?
Right. And just to put some context in it, so about 6 years ago, I founded a volunteer chaplaincy, a multi-faith chaplaincy, and Southwestern Women's Surgical Clinic here in Dallas. I was invited in by a member of my church who was working there to just go and do a blessing. And I'm running a big church, so I couldn't just run up there and do it. So we founded this sustainable volunteer chaplaincy. We had rabbis and Methodists and Presbyterians and Unitarian Universalists. And we're all pastors of churches. So we'd take our volunteer time and go sit with patients, families, even the staff. And we were just doing pastoral care with them.
Sure.
That clinic was seeing 100 patients a day for 6 days a week before SB8. When SB8, not all of them had abortions because some people didn't need them. Some people weren't pregnant, you know, but 100 patients would come through the doors. SB8 hit. It dropped down to about 30 patients, all of them scared, all of them not knowing what was going on. About half of them were actually legitimate pre-6 week pregnancies. And so I went up to the clinic. It was a quiet day in the clinic post SB8 and said, what's happening? Where are all these patients? And they said, most of them have misinformation. They think abortion's illegal. The other half are coming in even before they know they are pregnant. You know, the 6 week ban gives you about a week to discern whether you are pregnant or not. The 5 to 6 week, right? So I said to them, well, what's going to happen to all these patients? And we decided, and I said to them, how about we start bringing them to New Mexico? So at the current moment, we are bringing 20 patients every 2 weeks to a clinic in New Mexico for a safe and legal abortion. But just do the math on that. 20 patients every 2 weeks is a little different than 1,200 patients who would come through the doors of one clinic in one city serving Northeast Texas. So the harm to people's lives is incredible.
I'm so glad that you gave us that knowledge. Talk about, if you would, the recent lawsuit that you were a part of.
Yeah, so I was invited in to be a plaintiff on the case against SB8. It was two clergy. Interestingly, they called all the when it went up through the circuit and kept going up toward the Supreme Court. They called all the plaintiffs except the two clergy. I don't think they wanted they don't want any callers in the witness box. But the lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer, so what I understand about it is that the law now is pretty much dead, and our interpretation is that they're just waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on the Mississippi case, at which point we're looking at, you know, 26 states in the country having restrictive abortion laws. And we're almost, you know, at this point, we're organizing and thinking forward to that crisis, that public health crisis, mm-hmm. That family crisis that even extends way beyond Texas. Because if you think about it, every state from Texas, from west to, from El Paso to the Atlantic Ocean below the Mason-Dixon line is going to have illegal laws. Mm-hmm. We're going to have illegal laws in the Dakotas. We're going to have illegal laws in Arizona, maybe Wisconsin, certainly Ohio, Iowa, Idaho, Pennsylvania, possibly New Hampshire. It's going to be a crisis of scale we haven't seen in this country around a very simple medical procedure that every person who's pregnant should have a right to have. Mm-hmm. So the case that to go back to your question, we watched that case get tossed around to the circuit court, to the Supreme Court, to the Texas Supreme Court. And we knew all along they were trying to chip away at it and basically delay of game until the Mississippi case, the Dobbs case, can be ruled on, because that's the one that's going to challenge Roe v. Wade. Sure, we know how the Supreme Court is ruling. They're ruling ideologically on issues beyond abortion. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled on an issue about who can visit a death row inmate and decided that only a Christian pastor could visit, not a Muslim pastor. I mean, these are ideologically driven Supreme Court decisions, and we should all be scared about that. And so we're pretty clear the abortion case is going to go up in a heap of smoke. And we're just going to be fighting them on every state that wants to put these restrictive laws in. We're concerned about felony laws of aiding and abetting. At the moment, the aid and abet law, SB 8, allows us to help someone get a safe and legal abortion beyond the border of Texas. Whether they start regulating borders. I mean, can you imagine checkpoints at airports? And, you know, what are we going to be doing? Sonograms on women as they go through security? This should concern every single human being in America, because this is a freedom. These are freedom issues. As you started, these are freedom issues. Yeah. And not only that, but, you know, we started this SBA case as clergy saying, there's a freedom of religion issue here.
That's right.
You know, they're restricting what I can talk to people about in my own office, in the privacy of the confessional here in the office. Mm-hmm. So these things are very concerning. Even if you don't agree with abortion, if you hate abortion, you should still be scared about the kinds of laws they're trying to make around this, because it's chipping away at our sovereignty.
I find it superbly inspiring that you and the other faith leaders are not only standing with, but quite literally walking with, pregnant women abandoned by Texas politicians. I wish you would talk about that ministry.
Yeah. So it's a deep and abiding pastoral ministry that we're doing. We've got over 100 clergy in Texas just being in touch. We're trying to figure out how to expand the model that we created here in Dallas to Austin, San Antonio, Houston. The model is very simple. You know, we gather patients filtered through the clinic who are the poorest of the patients. They have to qualify under Medicare, and they have to get funding from abortion funding sources. And we gather them, we feed them, we tell them that not all people of faith are anti-abortion, which they're all surprised about. We tell them the story about my church here, the First Unitarian Church in Dallas, which is where the Roe v. Wade case was started by the women of my church all those years back when Ann Richards was a member of this church.
That's right.
She raised Cecile Richards here in this church before she moved to Austin. This church has always been a hot point for standing up for pregnant people's rights. And we tell them that story, and then we fly with them, and we just do pastoral ministry. And we're just there. The chaplains are just there for the patients all the way through the day. We spend 14 hours with them, and they're all kinds of people, just like they're always all kinds of people in the clinic. They're college students who if they have to have a pregnancy are going to get completely derailed. They're mothers of three children who just holding on to a job and trying to keep their children fed. They're, you know, the whole human spectrum that you can imagine. Yeah. This is one thing I have to say about abortion patients is I've met thousands of abortion patients. They're 13-year-old girls who've been lured into relationships, and they're your friend's mother at UC at the high school, social, like they're everyone in between. One in four women are having abortions in America. So, in our history. So this isn't like a rare thing. So we take these patients, we walk with them, we literally guide them. Some of them have never been on an airplane before. All of them are very sure they know that they're doing the right thing. This is not, there's not a lot of discernment, but there is a lot of family challenges. Some of them aren't telling their families. Some of them have to take a day off and not tell their boss where they are.
Yeah.
And, the pastoral ministry happens all the way to the end. And I told the story yesterday to a few chaplains that I spent the whole day, with this group. And as we got off the bus back at the church at night, it was, one patient said, "Will you walk me to my car? My boyfriend's on the other side of the building." I started walking with her, and she said, my boyfriend doesn't treat me very well. And I just stopped her and said, "So what are you going to do about that? Here's a person who now has been freed by the abortion from the man who I assume was abusing her." Right. And now the choice for her was, now next what? What's next? And I said, "You know where I am. I'm here." And so the ministry doesn't just end at the end of that day. The patients are, they know we're available to them. And so that's what it's like. I mean, it's a full long day of guiding people. Yeah. And it's not going to be the same all over the country. I'm talking to clergy in different states about the post-Roe realities and starting chaplaincies in clinics and legal states. Starting respite houses where people could rest. If you have to travel from Idaho to Minneapolis, you're gonna need help. But if you have to travel from Bethesda, Maryland or from Virginia to Bethesda, you can drive and come back the next day. So every state's gonna have a different kind of situation.
Sure. Daniel, I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd like for you to describe even another real life story or more that you've been a part of in this crisis, because I'd like for our people, I'd like for everybody to humanize the impact of these politically driven restrictions. I guess some know it and deal with it, but there are a lot of people who don't understand what all is going on here.
Yeah. Well, going back to the math, I mean, Texas, annually would have done 60,000 abortions. And, so if you do the math on that, and we're down to about 15% of that, the unseen story are all the people who are carrying pregnancies throughout that we're not meeting. And many of those are going to carry dangerous pregnancies. Many of them are going to be pregnancies they just can't handle. Some are going to be fine. This is what the anti-abortion people always say. They always telegraph a prenate in a womb to their 30-year-old, successful daughter. But we know that we don't know those potentials. We know that all kinds of things can happen. We know the potential we see in front of us, which is the real life human being. And there's so many stories, but on one trip that I took, I sat with a college student. Just imagine a young African-American woman who grew up here in Dallas area, was a successful sports star, went to college, is a bright person, but had had a child when she was 16, in the middle of high school, survived all that. Is now in college, is trying to get her degree in biology or microbiology, And all of a sudden now, one mistake, we're talking about, one little mistake with birth control, and there she is pregnant again. She has a choice, obviously, but the choice is derail college like she did in high school, or try to pursue her dreams there. And this is a young person. These are 21-year-old, 22-year-old people who have been through a lot already. And her choice is, and her right really around her body and beyond her body, her life. Yeah. This is people's lives we're talking about.
Yeah.
She makes that choice that her potential is greater than the potential of the prenate in the womb. And if you can just picture this person, talented, bright, cheerful, already a mother, but is on a path to a new career, new opportunity, being derailed completely by a pregnancy with a person that she may not have any real relationship with or want a relationship with. You know, there's that. There's, I've had patients with who have been abused. I don't know, but I suspect that there's a lot of incest patients who are not getting abortions. Imagine, because I've dealt with this in the clinic, imagine someone who's been raped by an uncle living in the same house, having to carry that pregnancy, birth that child back into the house where the abuser is. I mean, this is heartbreaking stuff. Yeah. And they have made the politicians have made no deregulation around this for things like incest. I know a lot of conservative people in Texas are actually quite worried about that issue.
Daniel, I'm interested in what are the lessons Americans living in other states need to learn right now from what Texas is enduring, especially folks who may be thinking, it can't happen here.
Yeah, well, it's going to happen in 26 states, so we know that there are a lot of trigger laws on these bans. What they can learn. So, first off, for a lot of people, it's easy just to ignore this whole thing.
Yeah.
Just to say it's not going to happen to me and it's not going to be a problem for me. But that's a kind of privilege that we need to examine, especially as people of faith, thinking about what our responsibility is to each other. The second thing I always say is, this is not a simple black and white issue. I mean, these are complicated human life issues. People get pregnant. All kinds of people get pregnant. And yes, what's going to happen is, there are going to be all kinds of different restrictions in different states. And people with resources are going to be fine. My friends here whose, high school or college daughter gets pregnant is going to be able to fly themselves to New Mexico or New York. But this is a war on the poor. This is another version of a war on the poor. We hear Dr. Barber talking about this around all kinds of ways, but we have to think about this is a very clear war on the poor.
Yeah.
Because this is going to affect black and brown women largely who are poor. The states, the legal states, if your state's going to be legal, and you want to do something about this, activate your congregations and your ministers and try to get houses of respite for patients. Try to create channels between legal clinics and illegal states. Start advertising campaigns. We're working on all these things.
Yeah.
National hotline. We're working on all kinds of stuff. And if you're in illegal states, we're going to have to examine the laws because we don't know, to what extent they're going to restrict our ability to actually do ministry with real people. And that's that, we could be thrust way deep underground on this thing. And in the meantime, if you're a clergy person and you're a person of a progressive clergy person, we're restarting the clergy consulting service, which was the service that helped women get safe and legal abortions pre-Roe. So there's a national effort to start this service to help people navigate these issues. And that's they can find me. They can, we can connect progressive clergy who want to be part of that.
I really would like for you to say a few words about the reason you feel called to do this work, because there has been such brainwashing of the public around issues of reproductive health and relentlessly implying that all religion demands absolute bans on abortion and on birth control. Could you just say why you are doing what you're doing?
Sure. Well, it's two things. It's the legacy of my congregation in these issues, that I stand on the shoulders of those women that fought for these things. But it's also that at heart, I'm a universalist. I believe that God created what God loves, and God loves all of us equally. And no human being is lesser than any other. And we need to honor that. We need to honor people's liberty, people's freedom, and people's, hard-won decisions about the lives that they want to live. Yeah. So having compassion and justice as my guide, I continue to fight in these arenas.
The Reverend Daniel Cantor is senior minister and CEO of First Unitarian Church of Dallas and the author of the book Faith for the Unbeliever. He's been a leader in faithful opposition to the anti-woman laws and regulations flooding across Texas and likely coming soon to your state as well. Daniel, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Dr. Gaddy, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll come back anytime you want to talk.